Skull and Everett present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Ifrit.
I'm Sickle. We're Sickle and Ifrit, and we're the Unhallowed Reviewers. We're going to jump into it this week with whatever topic we decide to start with.
Which is going to be Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Hey! Good idea, Ifrit.
So, the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was one of those books that I think we talked about in our upcoming of this year's episode. It used to be a book that was actually really scary, informative, and I think both for our childhoods. But
yeah, super freaky. Yeah. It's very, like the most traumatizing thing that you'll see before you turn 10.
Stories are kind of cheesy when you read them as an adult, but as a kid with the illustrations, man, got me good. But they're being turned into a movie series by Guillermo del Toro, and they just released all of the short trailers for all of, like, the monsters you're going to see in them. And so you got one for the Red Spot, one for the Pale Lady, one for the Jangly Man, and one for Big Toe. And, like, these are all stories that were in the book, but I guess in the movie it's taking place in this thing, place called Mill Valley, and a group of unwitting teens, like, opens the book that has all the scary stories in it and unleashes them on the town. And so, I don't know, I think it sounds pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it if it can get done well. The little mini TV spots and stuff they've been releasing is promising.
It's pretty freaky, the stuff that they've shown in the poster with the scarecrow. Like, it's all pretty well done.
Yeah, it's given me kind of a little bit of a Channel Zero vibe. I'm not sure why, but I think it's just because, like, the visuals have been very creepy and unsettling, but it's also, like, gradual and like, just, you know, it's like nonchalantly in front of you.
Yeah.
The viewer. And so it's kind of that, I think that's what gives me that Channel Zero vibe, is that Channel Zero did that a lot. It wasn't huge on the jump scares. It would just be like, here's this terrifying thing, and we're just going to have the camera just sitting on it.
And you get to look at it and get disturbed. Yeah. Kind of like Terrified, but like not as run to Zakari. There was, like, if you would have just sat on the terrified monsters and, like, interacted with them, it would have been would have been even more creepy.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that aims to be pretty good. What did you, let's segue into something you want to talk about, since I just jumped in with Scary Stories.
Sure. I think probably a good segue from that would be another thing that would be coming out pretty soon, which is a movie that Netflix recently acquired from Sundance, which is a movie called I Am Mother. It's about a robot. I'm just recalling this off of memory, so I'm not entirely sure I'm going to be saying it correctly. But the general synopsis is about a robot that is raising this little girl in this underground facility, and it's implied that there's been some type of apocalypse above ground, and Hilary Swank ends up getting into this facility somehow. And she starts talking to the little girl about, like, hey, this robot's probably is, like, lying to you. And so the whole movie is this, like, psychological thriller of, like, who's telling the truth? Is the robot, does the robot have ulterior motives that the child doesn't know about? Or does Hilary Swank have ulterior motives for some reason to try to get this girl to leave? And so it gave me the vibe of 10 Cloverfield Lane and Tau mixed together, where, you know, Tau is basically a Netflix ripoff of what's his face, Hal, from 2001 A Space Odyssey, and 10 Cloverfield Lane is a really good movie, but if you tried to do it again, it would be like watching The Sixth Sense the second time. It's like, okay, cool, I can pick up on all the little subtleties of the twist, but I already know the twist, so I don't know if it's really going to have the same impact that it did before. But either way, it's gotten really good response from Sundance, which is part of the reason that Netflix picked it up, so it could be really, really good, and I'll definitely be checking it out when it comes out.
Yeah, Sundance has actually produced a bunch of good stuff seemingly this year, but to your point about kind of taking a genre and like not, but a genre that has like been done and not really messing with it, I think like if this movie can mess with it, that'd be great. But I was reading a lot about Prodigy today, and the Prodigy just came out right recently, and it's about a, it's kind of like about a little kid, the Omen-esque type stuff, who is like violent and things like that. And spoilers, do you want to see Prodigy? Because I won't spoil it if you do want to see it. Prodigy.
Oh, I do want to see it. You already know the ending?
Yeah, so I'll tell you the journey, I won't tell you the ending. I was looking at the movie online, and I saw some articles talking about how it was pretty mundane, but the last 30 minutes is crazy. And I'm like, okay, I gotta see what it is, because, like, my demon soul wouldn't allow me to just leave that hanging, and I wasn't gonna be able to see it probably before it gets out of theaters. So, like, I was like, fine, I'll just look at the ending. Like, because I do that from time to time, because spoilers don't hit me very hard often. But it actually did seem like they had a pretty cool twist in it. It's not like M. Night Shyamalan crap twist. It's a really interesting one. And I hope I Am Mother does something like that, where they take a genre that's kind of stagnating, and or that's not stagnating, it's not the right word, but a genre that's been done before, and they take it in a new direction. And that's probably why it was in Sundance, and I hope that's why it was, you know, so well received.
Yeah, we can only hope that would be the case, something like that. Wait, on Prodigy, so wait, is it like in select theaters or something? Because I didn't even know that that was out yet.
I didn't know, well, maybe it's not, but people are already writing reviews and stuff on it, and not us, but obviously, but yeah. Some people already know the ending and are explaining it in videos and things like that, so.
Yeah. Well, speaking of other movies that are coming out at some point,
dun, 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 dun.
this is so lame. Tommy Wiseau, I'm not even sure if I'm saying his last
name.
Right,
yeah, I heard about this.
This is the director of The Room, which of course is the infamously popular cult film that's considered the worst movie of all time.
It's so amazing.
This is the director of that movie. He is going to be coming out with a horror movie called Big Shark, which is about a monster shark attack in New Orleans. And apparently it had like Deadpool-esque like test footage thing where like it was trying to show a part of the movie, but nobody knows if that's actually is part of the movie, if it was just trying to get funding, one of those things. And it was awful, and I don't know what to take out of something like that, but, like, a broken clock is right twice a day, and it's like, is it gonna be...
That's a weird analogy to pull out of that.
Well, I mean, like, is he gonna nail it being right? Like, I mean, he's wrong. Like, he's so wrong that he became right, for whatever reason, but, like, is it gonna really have the same charm again? Like, can he do that again?
I don't know. It's been a while.
Yes, but why? Where has he been? I don't understand.
The Disaster Artist came out, and that kind of pushed a lot of like focus back onto him, Tommy Wiseau or whatever his name is, and maybe that's why he thought it was time to do another movie.
James Franco back in the spotlight. If anything, just let Tommy Wiseau.
James Franco never left the spotlight. Speaking of James Franco, I watched a movie the other day called
yes,
The Vault.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
It
was alright. It wasn't like, it was terrible, but it wasn't like.
No, yeah, it definitely wasn't it just got so. I don't know how to explain what movies like that do to me, but where it like starts out like so original, and you're like, oh, this is cool, and then it's like the director gets scared, and he's like, well, people aren't gonna like this if we don't just have generic scares in it and just have generic plot developments. And it's like, well, dang it, you had such a good idea going, and then you just decided to make it continue on this bland path about halfway through, and then you're like, then you change your mind at the very end, and you're like, okay, we're gonna bring that twist back that you kind of felt like was coming, and it's like, that's too late now, I don't care anymore.
I already don't care. Yeah. You've already messed this up. There were some pretty cool death scenes in that, I think. Like, there was the, like, the ghost doing the stuff to the robbers. But, yeah, it was more just, like, one of those movies that I would, like, pause every, like, 30 minutes and, like, go do something else and come
back.
Yeah,
I don't know how long it was, but like... I remember it feeling long, which is never a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. But speaking of, you know, people not taking... directors not taking liberties.
Oh, Mr.
Like
Segway
that.
Over here.
Let's jam. Do you just like that? I just like segway through like four things, and like now we're in a whole different topic. Let's talk about Pet Sematary for a second. And so the second you're gonna have to talk to me about the second trailer for Pet Sematary and what's happening, because I can't really bring myself to care about this controversy, and I'm air quoting controversy, because I've only watched the original Pet Sematary once or twice, maybe. Never read the book. And so I'm not really sure, like, why I should care about what's happening right
now.
Yeah,
the spoiler alert, because apparently...
Spoiler alert.
Whichever
spoiler
studio
alert.
This is doesn't give a crap about spoilers, because they're just like, I'm just going to put them in the trailer. Who cares? So, it's really not that much of a spoiler unless you're some kind of, like, cult-following person of Stephen King and the old films... film adaptations where you're like, they should never touch those again, and don't do that, they're perfect. And like, if you're one of those people, that's really, in my opinion, that's the only way this could be ruining the movie for you. But most people know, even if they haven't seen Pet Sematary, some of the key details in the plot. One of the most important details is that the youngest child of the family that moves to this house outside of the Pet Sematary area gets killed, gets run over by a semi.
That's like in the first trailer. Like, you
see it coming.
Go by, and you're like, someone's gonna die from that, and it's probably one of the kids.
And the youngest in the book and in the old movie, it's the youngest child that dies, which I. People have been referring to the child as a baby. It's not quite a baby. I mean, he's like a toddler, probably between 2 and 3. I haven't read the book, so I'm sure the book tells you his exact age. I'm just basing it off of what I remember from the old Pet Sematary. But it's like a toddler, and the toddler gets hit by a semi, and you see it all, and his guts go. I'm just kidding. But you just like it's like it's implied. You know, kid gets hit. And people are saying, and like, oh, so in, I'm sorry, in this new trailer, they changed it over to the older daughter. That's the one that gets hit now by the semi. And so people are up in arms about it because they're, and one reason that people are up in arms about it isn't because they're like, well, you're not being truthful to the book, and Stephen King had it his way for a reason. You're ruining it.
I like your like fan voice. Like, it's very
this
nice.
Is a commentary on Reagan's administration, and you're ruining it by changing it to the.
Oh my God! What
know.
Are you talking
so,
about?
So, people are freaking out about that. But like the other reason that people are freaking out is because they think that Hollywood is slowly losing its guts because it's so PC and so scared to do anything controversial anymore. For fear of soccer moms coming at them in droves to tear down their studios, that they can't do anything that would offend the feeblest of minds. And it's just... So, like, they're saying, well, they don't have the guts to kill a child, like, kill a baby, kill a small... Like, even implied, like, they wouldn't... Don't,
a
yeah,
toddler.
A toddler. They don't have the will to do it, or the courage to do it, if you can use that word. And it's... It's not that everybody, you know, horror fans or just fans in general are like, come on, if you're not going to kill a baby, what's the point of making a movie? Like, it's not that. It's the, like, you've...
That's the stance they took. Hey, if you're not going to kill a baby, why are you
spending there's not this line in the sand that, like, that's the defining factor. Like, it's like, guys, this is clearly the next line, and you just got to cross it. Like, come on. Somebody's got to cross this line. It's not that. It's just that, like, if you're going to tell a story...
Well, that's kind of the point, though, right? Is that this isn't crossing a line. It's not like people haven't done this before. I mean, it's not like we haven't done these things before. People are stepping back now, and it's like this oversensitivity thing, right? We don't need to get into it too deep, but I totally get what you're saying. And it's like... It's even worse because they're not crossing a line that they've never crossed
before,
right?
we're regressing. We're devolving. to where, because we think that, man, this is really diving into some Dan Harmon stuff. But like we're devolving into because of like we think we're evolving because we're just like, well, you can't just, you've got to appreciate everyone's perspectives and respect everyone's opinions. It's like, well, the problem with that is that like eventually that comes full circle and you start constricting ideas and creativity and perspectives on things. And again, this isn't related directly to killing a toddler. Like that's on screen fake.
Like, no, it is now.
It's the idea that that represents, that if part of their reason for switching the characters is because of that, it's unsettling to what that could lead to in the future. Of like, if somebody has a great idea out there somewhere, and they're like, I really feel like this would be a great social commentary, and then they're afraid to do it because it's going to offend too many people, it's going to cause a ruckus, and then somebody's going to end up blacklisted from Hollywood because they were just trying to have an idea and an original thought.
Well, like, man, that's like the, I mean, we don't stop killing animals in horror movies because people get up in arms about it. So, like, why are we drawing lines like this? Right? Like, I mean, maybe we have seen, like, less dogs die in horror movies lately, and that's kind of, like, a reaction to society, but it really, it's not, like, those are the things that make you the most uncomfortable, and that's what horror is about, is, like, putting you in situations that you may never be in real life, and seeing how you react to them emotionally and mentally and even physically sometimes, and like to restrict that kind of ability. I mean, I don't want to go watch snuff films, but there's a line that we're not even close to crossing by like doing certain things.
It's not every horror movie, but there is a portion of the horror movie experience that is about experiencing death without having to experience death. It's experiencing the dark parts of life in a safe fictional environment, so that you can tackle.
And I think that's the best way to say it.
Yeah, fictional environment. Like everybody knows that it's fictional, and that's where some of the peace lies in it. That you're able to experience this on a psychological level without actually having to literally experience it, and it opens up.
And you don't have to repress any associated emotions, right? Like repression is a big deal in horror, and if you're not able to, like, get those things out via some medium, repression can take horrible tolls on people.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, but see, it's even got me, Ifrit. Like, it's even got me. I feel like I have to drive home the point that I don't need to see a toddler killed in a movie. Like, I feel like I have to drive that home right now so I don't offend somebody. And it's like,
but the fact that people would assume that is, like, part of the problem. Like, the fact that you have to assume that people would assume that is, like, part of the problem.
But there it is.
Anywho, let's talk about something a little more positive. So, one of the movies that I consider one of my favorite movies of the modern era is What We Do in the Shadows. I think it was a masterpiece. The commentary was funny. The story was great. The world it built was fantastic. Then Taika Waititi went over and did Ragnarok, which is also a great movie. And ever since then, we've kind of heard these rumors about a TV show for What We Do in the Shadows, and TV shows surrounding the other characters, possibly another movie about the werewolves. And we finally got a trailer recently for the What We Do in the Shadows TV show. It's going to be on FX, and it looks really good. It has the same similar cast as the original movie, but different. They're in America instead of in New Zealand, and Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi are directing it. So that's gonna be awesome.
That movie is great. I don't know what it is, but you know, there's just some things in movies, like intended to be funny or not, that every time you see it, you just can't help but laugh. And every scene with believe it was, his name was Pieter, the really old one, the ancient one, every time they showed him on screen, I'd just die laughing. Everything about that movie was was so funny to me. So, and I think it fits great into a TV show. I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. To continue that, because it doesn't feel, it feels like a universe that can be revisited, and it's just the hijinks that they can get into fits perfectly into that mold. So I think, yeah, I think it's a great idea.
And there's a guilty pleasure actor in there for me, too.
Yeah, who's that?
I've always been kind of a secret fan of British television, and Matt Berry's in the show as one of the vampires, and Matt Berry's, like, film, you know, filmography is you know, things like Snuffbox, The Mighty Boosh, Toast to London, all this weird stuff that you never, it's just so weird, it's so weird, and I highly suggest everybody go watch it, but he's the perfect character to be in the show, and I'm very excited to see him play a vampire in America.
Moving on to another one that's more of a cheery thing for us as horror fans, is that the one of the head people, I don't remember his name and his exact position, but one of the head people at Disney has reassured us, now this still could change, but hopefully it doesn't, he has reassured us that the Fox merger will not affect the R-rated franchises of Fox in that exchange. So the, you know, like Alien, Deadpool, things like that, will continue to be R. They won't get in the way of those franchises. I don't know what that means for when their properties run out, when their rights run out, if they're going to try to sell them, if they're going to try to get rid of them, if there's a time limit before they wouldn't accept the R anymore, or if they just straight up backtrack and say, you know what, never mind, we changed our mind, we're just going to dump these properties. Like, they could still very well do that, because there's nothing in paper that says that they have to, that we know of.
I feel like this rated R thing, Disney rated R thing, is kind of like the Batman never killing people stuff. It's just something that we always kind of assume, because there's so few movies released that are rated R from Disney, but they exist, and it's just a matter of, like, understanding that they're going to do what makes them money, and sometimes that's going to be taking an R-rated movie to a PG-13 movie, like literally every other studio does sometimes.
Yeah, and they've, but that's something that they can hide behind, Disney can hide behind, it's kind of a clever strategy, in my opinion, that they've been able to do up to this point before the Fox merger really brought it to the forefront, and that is that, like, that Disney can say, oh, we're doing this for moral reasons, like, we don't want to expose, you know, we're a family, studio, so we're not gonna, like, introduce anything that, beyond PG-13, but they also know, deep down, that the cash cows are in G through PG-13 movies. The more, demographics that you can expose your film to, the higher chance you have of financial success from those films, and R-rated films come with the highest risk, and you can still have great movies and successful movies that come from that, i.e. Deadpool, I can't think of any others off the top of my head, but Deadpool's in.
Well, there's some more, actually, so, like, Deadpool, yeah, those are the Fox ones, but if we look at, like, all of the things that Disney owns, we're talking about, like, a multinational conglomerate here. I mean, they owned Miramax and Dimension Films at one point, which is means Kill Bill, Clerks, Sin City, The Faculty, Scream. Like, all that stuff was under the umbrella of Disney. Yeah. So, like, I mean, it's kind of silly to think that because their Fox is buying them, or Disney's buying Fox, that Fox cannot function as its own company anymore. I mean, they didn't do that to Marvel at all.
Yeah, and you're probably right on that. I don't know a lot of detail on the other studios that they've owned, and they, for whatever reason, at least in my the rock that I live under, it was never something that was publicly addressed as much as this merger is, where you didn't think, like, I don't recall anybody ever going, like, I thought that Disney didn't like R-rated movies. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not doing the voice right. I didn't think that Disney liked the R-rated movies, and why are they letting Dimension do it? What a bunch of hypocrites. I never remember them doing that. By the way, I don't know what that's going to sound like. I'm going to break the fourth wall. I don't know what that's going to sound like.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. Okay, anyway, but it sounds like it could be promising. Just as promising as them possibly using James Gunn's script for Guardians 3, but we'll hope that Disney's good and not evil. And
man, talk about hypocrisy. I can't say...
Okay, don't, no, we don't have
well,
to do
and
it.
I
we
just can't stand the James because Gunn business, man. I'm so glad that DC's shoving that back in Marvel's face.
Yeah, it was a very dumb decision on Disney's part for literally no reason, and I think that that was a very big fail for them, and they've lost themselves to probably a great franchise leader. But, yeah, let's talk about something else in that kind of low-down genre. I don't know what that was for. I have no idea why. I was trying to talk about the new Hulu.
Oh, that was so good. That was really... It's just if I had picked up on it, I could have just jumped right into it, but now it's just clumsily falling into it.
Hey, that's what we're known for.
Down is another one of the Into the Dark series on Hulu that just came out recently for February, I would assume. That's why I probably just saw it pop up. And it's about...
It says it's set around Valentine's
Day,
right?
Is it centered around Valentine's Day?
It's set around
it
Valentine's
is,
Day.
Yeah, now that I recall. Yeah, it is. It's about the two workaholics that get stuck in an elevator late at night on the upcoming Valentine's Day / President's Day weekend, and how they, you know, or like, in, you know, it's just this slowly growing story plot of these two stuck in this elevator. And it eventually, you know, as Into the Dark implies, it does eventually escalate into a horror thriller scenario. It takes time to get there, and the payoff is okay. It's not anything amazing. It's not anything that's going to blow your mind. You're probably going to guess it halfway through. If you're going to watch a horror movie / thriller movie in an elevator, watch Devil. Don't, you know, I mean, if you haven't seen that and you want to see a good one, go towards that, go in that direction. Go more supernatural, go with something that, like, has more of a fun plot to it. This one isn't gonna blow any minds, at least it didn't for me when I was watching it. I wasn't like, oh, you've got to be kidding me!
But it's short, what? Right? It's only, like, an hour and a half.
It's not terribly long. It had somewhat interesting, I don't even know if I'd call them interesting characters. They weren't terribly, like, original in their in the way that they are portrayed on screen. It's hard for me to it wasn't a waste of time. I'll say that. It definitely wasn't a waste of time. I mean, you can sit down and enjoy it and enjoy it for what it is, but it might as well be just a random, like, slashery type movie. That you'd watch.
That's interesting because it's done so, like, it's on Hulu, but the production company is Blumhouse Television. So Blumhouse does a lot of horror. I think they did the new Halloween movie. So it's interesting to see that these are kind of like hit or miss.
Yeah.
Because I would expect them to be a little bit more.
I did too, and I was expecting that going in, and I've yet to emphatically enjoy one. Like, Pooka was probably the closest because I thought it was... Because it was...
You still haven't watched
I have
The
not,
Body,
No,
though.
There are still a couple I haven't watched, but okay. Like I said with you, like I told you before, The Body, that one in particular, it makes me feel like the synopsis sounds like a comedy to me. It sounds like a dark comedy.
It kind of was.
Oh, you watched it.
The short that's based on was. No, I've seen the short
based
on. And it was kind of comedic. I mean, everybody doesn't believe he's killed a dude. And he's dragging his body around all night, and they think it's part of his costume. I'm like, that's why it's kind of funny, because you're just like, come on, guys, like, you're not even really trying to investigate this dude you don't even know. You're just, like, letting him walk around.
Which is hilarious to me, and I wish that it would have just explored that. But again, I haven't seen it yet. It's just that, for whatever reason, I can't remember exactly what it is, but something just implied to me that it doesn't take the comedic angle on it. And maybe that's what makes it interesting. And I'm just not giving it a chance, but yeah, unfortunately, none of them have blown me away yet, but maybe the best one is around the corner. I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, you never know. We're gonna spend the last minute talking about Velvet Buzzsaw, because I think it's worth a watch, but I don't think you should approach it watching it as a horror movie.
I agree. I thought that, I think I admitted in my review, on Monday, or Tuesday, I think is when I posted it, that... I actually ended up, in hindsight, after watching it, was more interested in the opening scenes than I was when the horror actually kicked in. because I found I started to get really invested in the characters, and just because that world is so similar to the world that I experienced in college,
Oh, really?
It, like that just like pretentious, pompous,
so it's
hypocritical.
Real. It's, like,
oh
on,
yes,
real.
Like that is what the art world is like. That's what the art. That's what art dealers are like. Like this movie is. It's unfortunately perceiving that world more realistically than we're willing to, than they would ever admit, and that we're that is clear in reality. But I bet it's closer.
That's kind of a horrible thing right there in its own right that makes it a little more scary to me. But like, the scary stuff wasn't actually scary, but the commentary is.
Yeah, it really isn't. I mean, I could be wrong, but it's not that far off from reality that the art dealer world is a scam. It's essentially a scam. It's art critics controlling the market so that art dealers can buy and sell pieces of work and just screw over rich people. And like it's fine because it's a nice, like, it's one of the last ways that you can screw over the 1%, but these people are also kind of part of the 1%, because by screwing over all these people they're making tons of money, but it's all just garbage. Like at one point in the movie it implies that the art dealers and the art critics are in cahoots, which I believe is a reality.
Well, and they talk about the whole, like, how art people are, like, museums can't afford to show the art because they're not as expensive, like, they don't have the money to buy it off of people who are spending, like, millions and millions of dollars to buy a piece of art only they get to look at. Like, that was an interesting thing I never really thought about, and that kind of stuff was, for me, as someone who's, like, doesn't even know that world kind of was real, it was, like, is this real? This is real. This is really lame if this is real.
I feel, and again, I could be wrong. Some random person that's like an art dealer's assistant out there is probably going to be like, you don't know what you're talking about. But that's fine. Whatever. I think that, like, we're getting a more realistic portrayal than we realize in between supernatural art deaths. We're getting a pretty accurate, bleak portrayal of how that works, and I want to give a shout out to Jake Gyllenhaal. I thought his performance throughout the entire movie was really, really well done.
Agreed.
And I'm really glad that. Never mind, that's a spoiler. I'll just drop that. But yeah.
Yeah, don't do that. I mean, again, I would 100% watch it. Don't expect it to be something that's going to scare your pants off. It's not like. It's not that kind of movie, but it is a good movie, and it I thought it was very, I thought the story was very well done.
Yeah, I agree. Yep, it's a good one to watch, but yeah, don't go into it expecting, some people, I think, implied in their reviews that it's like, oh man, and it just totally just blows your mind and with intensity and like horror, it doesn't. Not if you're a horror fan, it doesn't.
I don't know how anybody could think
but
that.
But it's not that twisted, but it is good.
I almost feel like it was two stories put into one, because you have this story about this, like, crazy art dealer, or this crazy art critic and everything that goes on in his life, and you have this crazy story about this psychotic artist, and it's like, what happens if we run these things next to each other? Oh, look, they're intertwined.
Yeah, and I almost wish that, I don't know how you feel about this, but I almost wish that it would have been more, I think that was probably my biggest critique of it, was that I wish that it had been more obvious and clear that this artist had some type of, that either his psychosis in his art was either more directly linked, or that his psychosis was due to some supernatural force in his art, and that's why he wanted it destroyed. Yeah. I don't feel like it was ever fully explored, and so it's just kind of just randomly like, oh, well, now it's killing people. It doesn't really dive into that, and I wish it would have dove into that more.
Alright, well, that's all we have to talk about today. Like, comment, subscribe, let us know what you think about all the stuff we talked about today, let us know anything you think we should cover, and
yeah,
we'll
sorry
see you next
about
time.
Talking about wanting to kill toddlers in movies. We didn't...
I'm
oh,
not
okay.
sorry
well,
about that.
Okay, Ifrit's not sorry.
Sickle's okay, well, pretty sorry about it. I don't know why Sickle's so sorry about it. It's not like he hasn't done it before.
Whoa! Oh, well.
You are a serial killer.
We don't talk about that. We don't talk about that. Everybody's innocent down here, remember? That's how that works.
Goodbye, everybody. Non-innocence.